Hello, welcome to The Do Podcast with me, Gav Thompson. We are the new podcast series from The Do Lectures. The Do Lectures is an idea-sharing event from glorious Cardigan Bay in Wales, recognised by both The Guardian and The Sunday Times as being one of the best ideas events in the world, with over 150 million views of their lectures online. The idea behind The Do is simply to inspire and encourage people. My job here is to bring that essence to life in a new podcast format. Season 1 is entitled The Story Behind the Person and the Person Behind the Story. A brief summary of my story. I'm the father of three amazing kids, aged 13, 11 and 2. I'm the proud husband to my gorgeous wife, Karina. I'm a tongue cancer survivor, hence the slightly lispy voice and dodgy pronunciation here sometimes. A 26-year career in advertising and marketing. I was the CMO of Paddy Power, Yopa and Bowden and the founder of GiftGaff. But I've now been unemployed since COVID began. You can see more of my story online in my own Do Lecture from 2012. The Do Lectures have given me really big shoes to fill here, and up until a few months ago, I'd never recorded a podcast. But my aim here is to tell interesting stories, and in doing so, hopefully inspire and encourage any listeners. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really hope you enjoy this. Season 1, Episode 6, Childhood Anxiety, with Hector and Polly Boswell. So today I'm talking to Hector, who was recently turned 14, and he suffers from anxiety. We have a very honest and revealing conversation about how it actually feels to be a child who has anxiety issues, and he offers up some insightful and useful advice about how parents and adults can help him manage it. I also talked to his mum, Polly, about how she has handled being a mum to a boy who was diagnosed with anxiety aged 10. This podcast was recorded a few months ago at the end of the UK lockdown, when kids had been at home for ages and away from school for ages since the beginning of COVID. It's a shorter podcast than normal, and also my first podcast with no swearing in it, so thank goodness for that. And for regular Do podcast listeners, a little announcement that the next few episodes of season 1 will be coming out every Friday for the next few weeks before we bound straight into season 2 and go back to fortnightly releases. Anyway, enough from me. Let's get to Hector and Polly. So, welcome Hector.
Thank you.
Welcome Polly.
Thank you.
So, let's set the scene, Hector. Let's kind of go back to... what were you doing, or where were you before you were diagnosed with anxiety? Tell me a bit about your life before this happened.
It was first diagnosed at school because I had a complete strop on the football pitch because the game wasn't going my way. I went in and saw this counsellor. Her name was Caroline. At first, we thought it was just me getting angry and stuff, and then she realised that I had perhaps been worrying about things that I shouldn't have been worrying about, like small things, for instance, getting on a train on my own. I remember one time I had been asked to go and deliver some, I think it was nappies to someone on the patch, and I was properly scared because the area around me, there were a lot of people who hang out at night and stuff. So I ran. I ended up tripping and breaking my arm.
Wow.
Because I was pretty scared. I just wanted to get there and get back. And stuff like that, I didn't realise that at the time, but when I looked back, I was like, yeah, that was probably like a bit of anxiety that I had.
Before you met Caroline and spoke to her, did you have any idea what this thing might be or might be called?
No, I didn't really think about it. I kind of just let it happen and didn't realise it was there. I kept doing the things I was doing and kept worrying about the things I was worrying about without realising what was happening to me.
And I think there were physiological effects as well, weren't there? So you would phone me and be worried from school, because Hector was at boarding school at the time.
Right.
And he'd phone me and he'd say, "Mummy, I'm not joking." And he'd be worried about something, say moving house or whatever it was. And I'd say, no, we'll all be fine, we'll all be fine. And he'd say, no, my palms are sweating and I can't breathe. And so I think you had panic attacks and
They
were definitely physiological.
Those phone boxes that we had to sit in were definitely stuffy.
They probably didn't help, right?
No.
Okay, so did you look at your friends or talk to friends and think that you were suffering anything different from them?
Well, I just kind of thought I was the same as them. I thought they'd probably, because I didn't show my inside feelings, so I thought they wouldn't be either. So I kind of thought it was normal what I was feeling, everyone else was feeling as well, probably. But then everyone has anxiety, just like a small amount or some larger than other.
So you talked to Caroline. Polly, were you involved at this point?
I didn't ever meet, I mean, I met her, but I never actually was in on any of the counselling with Hector. That was all down to Caroline, and Caroline was a school counsellor. So we were lucky that Hector could see her. She identified really quickly that there was anxiety across all of Hector's life. So maybe daddy being in the army, his sister he was worried about, school he was worried about me, he was worried about where we were going to be living next, because we've lived in 12 houses in 15 years. So Hector at 14 has lived in 12 houses. So, you know, it's a lot of change. But I remember Hector saying to me once that he suddenly realised that he worried about things that other people didn't seem to worry about.
So yeah, Hector, tell me about that. When did you first realise that you were like your mum said, worrying about other stuff that maybe your friends weren't?
For instance, if one of my friends asked, do you want to go to the co-op to get a packet of sweets or something, I would go, but not willingly. I wouldn't tell them that I didn't want to go. I think I'd get all quiet and kind of close my doors. And I was really aware about the things going on around me. And the fact that I can't control what's happening was really hard to deal with, because I want to know what's going to happen before it happens. It's like the fear of the future and not being able to control it.
So in that example where something quite day-to-day, like we're going to go to the shops, get some sweets, what's going through your head at that point when your friends go, hey, we're going to go to the shops, get some sweets, are you coming, Hector? What's going through your mind at that point? Or what was going through your mind?
Sounds really silly, but for instance, I think I'm going to get mugged or kidnapped or something. It never seems to happen, but I still think it might. But I still think it might. And it's really bad, but I make judgments on people based on what they look like, which is really bad. But how they dress, how they walk, or what kind of car they drive or something. But it's not like there's a very select few amount of people.
When you're making those judgments about people, where does that thought process go? If someone turns up in a car that you think is something, what's your brain doing at that point?
It's really ridiculous, but I really worry and I start to get all heated and stuff, and I try to find ways to get out of the situation quickly. For instance, stop to tie my shoelace and let the person walk by and they're gone, or cross the road or to get to the other side. It just feels really like something bad's about to happen, but I don't know that it's about to happen, but I really feel like something bad is about to happen. My hands get sweaty, I get hot, I get red in the face. I just feel like I really want to run somewhere.
So age 10, you get this diagnosis of anxiety, and as a 10-year-old, did you know what anxiety was? How did that make you feel?
I knew what anxiety was. Obviously, our school lecture us about it all the time, which is good. I questioned whether she was right or wrong, because I didn't really realise it at first. But then when I really thought deeply about it, I was like, yeah, I think I do. There was nothing where I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. Everyone understood what it was. It wasn't like a single reaction. It was like over time, if I said I'm not going to do this, they'd understand. They wouldn't keep trying to make me come with them or something. They would be able to help me and take me somewhere else or do something else. And
I remember Hector saying once he had a bit of a meltdown on a overseas trip, didn't you, in France?
Oh, yeah.
And he ran away off the camp, and some poor geography teacher had to run over a mile to catch him, didn't he? The whole camp was in lockdown, it was all going on. And when he came back, obviously he had to go to headmaster to explain himself, which is, you know, understandable. But because he was doing it in the moment, he said his friends, they laugh, make a joke, and everyone moves on. He said, you were saying the trouble with adults is that they don't let anything go. So when he got back, he had to relive all the moment of what he was worrying about, because he then had to tell the teacher why he got cross about this, that, or the other. And actually, it was because he was terrified of getting on the ferry to come back from France, which was not till the next day.
Sink.
or the day after.
Okay.
So he then has to relive all of those anxieties in order to tell, because...
Which must make you feel pretty anxious, right?
Yeah. And then also, when they say come to my office tomorrow, I then spend the rest of that night worrying about going to their office tomorrow and what's going to happen. And when you get in, they just lecture about the same thing that they did yesterday. I just want to get up and walk out of the room, which I did.
Because they're lecturing you about an emotion that you had no control over in the first place, you're being told off for...
It's
experiencing an emotion that is completely out of your control. It feels very unfair that would be the case. And I think in the early days, most of the outbursts were due to something that was approaching. So whether it was a trip to Poulton's Park or a theme park, that he was nervous about the people, the rides, all of that. But of course, everyone's going in the year and it's really exciting. And that's really, and you know, I'm 12 years old and I should really be looking forward to this. But for Hector, he wasn't. And so 2 days before that, he would be kicking off. And I think we learned quite quickly that it was best to look forward as to what was coming up. And then it would all make sense. So then I could say to him, do you actually want to go to Thorpe Park?
Yeah.
Is that what's making you, you know, do you want to have a go or do you want to... And then you'd calm down because you'd realise that someone had...
So Hector, in your head, someone said, right, we're going on a ferry in 2 days or we're going to Thorpe Park. Your brain is immediately jumping to that event in the future and worrying about the worst thing that could happen. Is that right?
Yeah. Now I think I'd be a little bit more willing to go on the ferry. I mean, it's fun sitting with your friends, watching telly. But I'd still be thinking in the back of my mind, like, what if the ship sinks? I'll probably survive, but what if all my belongings don't? Silly things like that. Or before, when we're on the top, the wind blowing my hat off or something into seeing me never getting it back. It's just really ridiculous things like that that make me really heated and I just worry about them.
And I think also you like to absolutely know. So, for example, the other day we were going from a friend's static caravan down to the beach. It's like, what do I need? What are we going to do? You know, what are we doing when we get to the beach? And everyone else is like, grab a towel and your shorts
they
and let's
really
get going.
Unclear about what was
Whereas
happening.
Hector likes to know exactly what
all
is going
facts.
To happen. All the facts. It's going to be a flat beach. We might pay a bit of rounders. There's going to be some paddle boarding. He's not so good at, right, grab your stuff, we're going.
I just want to have a rough idea of what's happening. I don't want to have a brief idea. I want to have like a solid idea that I can make sense in my head of what I'm going to do next and what I'm going to do after that and after that and after that.
Once you had a diagnosis, so they said you had anxiety and panic attacks, as you went forward with that, did that make it easier knowing that it had a name and a label? Was that better for you?
To a certain extent, yes. At the same time, it was just as normal as it was before I was told what it was and what happened. But once I was given ways to cope with it and mechanisms to work around it, it was much easier. Like in the evenings, probably when I worry most, well, just before I'm about to go to bed, loads of things in my head, cogged worrying and stuff, and there's like positions that I could sleep in that really helped, surprisingly. I took some magnesium pills, which I still take because they just help me get to sleep quicker, and just little things like that that really helped. And being able to talk about it was also a really helpful thing. Every Friday, she would come in and we'd have an hour-long session.
Share with the listeners some of those sort of coping mechanisms that maybe you got taught then.
Removing myself from a situation that I can see is going to go the wrong way quickly before it's going to happen. When I go to bed, I give myself time to relax before I go to bed instead of getting straight from what I was doing a minute ago to going straight to bed. I like a bit of downtime, maybe read a book or just lie on your bed. It's really nice.
A big part of it has been exposure therapy, which is just trying things again and again and again. Hector isn't anxious about walking on grass, hooray, because he's going to have to do that. There are things in his life which he will at some point have to do, getting on a train, going to the shops. And I think what worries me is that maybe when he's living in London and someone asks him to go and do something, it's easier not to go and do it because the process of getting there and then with the anxiety of then trying to get back. And I think that for me is a worry. in terms of as you go forward. So for us, it's been, you know, he never liked running in the woods. Now he'll go for a run in the woods on his own. He won't go out on the roads, but it's a start, you know. And yeah. he'll cycle to the shops because then he's on a bike and he's getting there quicker and getting back quicker and he's got a way to get away. And doing things over and over again, like going on the tube when we first lived in London, was an absolute
nightmare. So you mentioned that before we had this conversation, tubes and trains are sort of bad for you. Tell us why.
Well, if you get hit by one, it hurts. I've heard.
That's true.
Especially the tubes. It's more of a tube because they're really tightly packed. I can't see everything that's happening. I can't see where I am if I'm standing in the middle. I like being able to sit down and assess the situation. But when I'm being crammed in and the doors are closing quickly and I just need to get into the train and get to where I want to go, I don't want to have any of the faff of having to budge through people to get to the ticket thingy. And it's just really stressful because I can't see what's happening over here. And I used to worry about pickpockets, like people coming and just taking something out of your pocket because you were all so close and so touchy.
They're all realistic things to worry about. But other people manage worrying.
They have a sort of perspective of them, don't they?
Exactly. So, you know, if I have my handbag and it's unzipped, Hector will be the one zipping it up, which is great on the one hand.
Very useful, actually.
Very useful on the one hand. But when there are so many, you add all those little things together, sometimes you think, gosh, do you know, to not have that stress, I'd rather someone stole my purse.
So we fast forward 4 years, you are now 14. And what's amazing, and the reason we're talking today, is that you have spoken about this publicly, you've been filmed talking about it, you are now let's be honest, you're a spokesman for child, teenage anxiety. Tell me how that came about, because it's one thing to be diagnosed with something and deal with it with your family and friends. It's a whole other thing to go, I'm going to talk about this publicly and be a spokesperson for it. How did that happen?
Well, you know, I worry about things that people don't worry about. For instance, stage. I don't get stage fright. I love performing arts. So I'm not particularly shy. I like talking about things and I'm probably the loudest out of my friends. And this poetry competition came around. You had to talk about something that meant something to you. Everyone did plastics and saved the ocean.
A lot of recycling.
All the fun stuff. And then I just thought that it'd be a good opportunity to share my story. And then after that, a lot of parents came to my headmaster asking to see this counsellor.
So Hector did this TED Talk, and the only way to pass it to friends, for friends to see, because he did this amazing speech, was to put it on YouTube. And so it went on YouTube, and then we were approached by the Jenny Rayner Foundation.
Lucy. It's called the Lucy.
Yes, but Jenny is the ambassador, and her daughter sadly committed suicide when she was 22. So Jenny set up this charity called the Lucy Rayner Foundation in memory of her daughter, and she is the one that puts on the Shard events and the mental health summits. And so she approached us to do those.
It's called Can Anyone Hear Me? Because it's about making sure children are talking about their feelings rather than bottling it all up.
Question for you, Polly. Having a son that has I think we can call it a mental health issue.
Yeah, definitely.
As a parent, how does that make you feel?
I think it empowers you, actually. I think I feel relieved that I know, because if I'd carried on dealing with situations the way that I had dealt with them, not knowing, then I think Hector and I could have quite a different relationship right now.
Yeah.
So I like to think I'm quite patient in the moment and can probably, if anybody, bring him round to a situation or persuade him into a situation. For example, the beach. Everybody piles their kit up on the beach when they go surfing. And leaves it, don't they? You know, you have your phone, your keys. You know that everybody's got piles of keys and phones. And
beach etiquette.
Hector will not leave his stuff on the beach. You know, this is difficult as a parent because either you appease him and a parent sits lovingly on the beach, and I'm afraid I like my surfing way too much for that to be me, or my husband's missing out because he's sitting on the beach watching his kit that doesn't need to necessarily be watched, so that Hector can go surfing, or Hector sits on the beach and he misses out as a child who... But Hector is willing to sit on a beach rather than go and surf, which is what he loves to do. This is how strong it is. Most people go, oh, golly, okay, well, I'm a bit worried about that. But gosh, if my wallet goes and my phone goes, well, hey-ho.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the end of the world. To Hector, it is the end of the world. So I'd rather protect those than go and do what I enjoy to do. So I did manage to, in my own way, talk Hector around and just say, you know, it's not particularly fair on Daddy. But ultimately, it's down to Hector to be brave enough and take that ownership of not wanting someone else to sit there, but missing out himself. And that is massive. Whereas before, I would have said, oh, come on, man up, wet pants, you know, let's get on with it.
So let's do, that's an interesting thing.
I can appreciate how tough that is for him to get to that point.
That assumes, as a parent, you've now got the sort of inbuilt capacity for patience and tolerance and understanding for Hector's condition, which, let's be honest, I'm a parent of three kids. In the thick of it, I don't really care what you want to call it. If you're getting in the way of the family having fun or you're being X, Y, Z, as a parent, you can easily lose your temper and just go, for F's sake.
And I was. I
did. I mean, how does... Because then you're in this weird thing where... You know, Hector, that you've got this thing that means you view things in a certain way. Your mum actually knows you've got this thing, but in that moment, your mum's just going, you're kind of going to snap out of it.
And I did. And I used to do that. That's exactly what I used to do. And I think up until Hector asked me for help, which he actually physically did, that was a big turning point, I think, for me, was that no 10-year-old says, make these feelings stop, that quote unquote.
Yeah.
And then, of course, with that endorsed by the council, you know, still I'm a bit cynical, not now, but at the time I'm a bit cynical about it, thinking, really? You know, he's a 10-year-old boy, he's being a just pain. You know, and yet again, it's Hector causing the problem. We're all rallying around Hector. But the more that she explained to him and we spoke, and the more it became clear. I could see it. It unfolded in front of my eyes. People don't explain enough to kids what they're about to do, where they're about to go. Yeah, we'll leave in 5 minutes. We're going to the beach.
It's like a done deal. Just accept it.
Accept it. And because you're 12 years old, you are going to enjoy it.
Yeah, of course.
But not all 12-year-old boys enjoy everything. Not all of them enjoy theme parks. Not all of them enjoy... the sea. They will become to. So Hector would. Now, we'd go to the theme park and we'd have a great time. But we'd manage it in a way.
And is the key to unlocking it? And again, I'm thinking of people listening to this who may not have got to a diagnosis, although their kids may be a bit younger than you are, Hector. Is the key to unlocking this a bit of honesty on both sides? Honesty from the parent explaining, we're going to do this for these reasons, we're going to do this for these reasons. And honesty on the child's part by going, you know what? I'm not very comfy about that for these reasons. And again, I'm being really simplistic, but is that helpful?
Well, yeah, but in order for that to happen, it's great for your mum to come and talk to you about it, but what they really need to do is actually listen to you rather than them telling you what's going to happen. You need to be able to tell them how you're feeling and what you want to happen.
Little known fact, Polly, listeners, I'm actually a qualified primary school teacher. Who knew?
You
never guess now. And actually, I do remember this thing that I was taught in teacher training, which is a child's view and emotions is just as valid as a parent's, an adult's view and emotions. And often in the society and world, we assume that an adult's view and emotions overpower a more qualified or more valuable or more valid. And it's not. How you feel and the strength feeling you have is just as strong as how you feel. But just because you're the parent doesn't mean you're right. It just means... You're the parent.
That's what I ended up feeling a lot of the time, like during the 10-year-old bit. Like, teachers would tell me things, and I'd be like, I am allowed to be right. Like, they'd think I'm wrong, but I'm telling you I'm right.
So true, because how you feel is authentic. Yes. No one can, if you feel anxious because you're going to get on this ferry and you're worrying it's going to sink, you can't normally go, that's stupid. It's how you feel, right?
You can't tell me I'm not feeling
exactly.
Like that.
No, you can tell how to be to people and how to behave. in terms of, you know, what's right and wrong.
Within reason. Within, up to your within reason. If you lose your temper and you feel the urge to run away, extract yourself a situation, then fill your boots. If I was 14 and I had this diagnosis of anxiety, I would sometimes be tempted to behave a bit badly and say to my parents, back off, I've got anxiety. Has that ever crossed your mind? Never done that?
Never done that.
See, I'm projecting my own bad behaviour.
I will tell you one thing that the counsellor said to me. She said, one of the reasons it's clear to me that Hector has anxiety is because he is desperate to not have it.
Right.
So he would rather not have these issues and not feel how he feels. He would rather feel like the next boy. So she said to me, or to Hector, would you like me to tell your teachers what the situation is? And Hector's like, no, I just want to fix it.
It is interesting. Childhood teenage anxiety is a massive thing in the news society because of the pandemic. You know, everyone's pretty anxious, right? But it's particularly with children and not being able to go to school, not seeing their friends, not being able to do exams. So a few questions. Has your anxiety, how's it been during the pandemic?
I know for some people they've really struggled being stuck indoors, especially children without other siblings. I'm kind of lucky to have a sister that's nearer my age who we can sit down and play a board game with without having a fight, which doesn't happen often. But and sort of things like that, and being bored and being stuck in urban areas where you can't go out on a bike ride, you can't go out on a run in the woods or remove yourself from your hot flat or something. It's just things like that.
You've publicly spoken about this a few times now, and I don't want to try and put this into too simplistic terms, but there will be people listening to this who are either kids, teenagers, your age, but younger, who'll be going, well, that reminds me of how I feel. And there'll be parents go, well, that reminds me of my child. Any advice you can give anyone listening to how they should manage or deal with or confront their anxiety?
Yeah, as the person who's feeling all of the anxieties and stress, I would rather that someone listened to me than talk to me, or took my mind off things rather than keep bringing them up and trying for them to find ways to deal with it with me. Also, it's really tiring constantly worrying about things. But when someone just sits down and listens, and just like a chat about the football or something, is really just nice and relaxing.
And Polly, as the mum, as any mums listening, or parents listening, or dads listening, who've been through the journey you went through a few years ago or going through it now, any advice for anyone else?
I think for me is that if you've got a feeling, you know, we spend a lot of time Googling, don't we, and trying to self-diagnose this, that and the other, and probably for our children too, from when they're very, very small babies, why is mine crying at night, you know, whose book am I going to read next to try and find the miracle cure? But I think there probably comes a point where perhaps I felt I couldn't overcome the situations that I was experiencing with Hector sometimes. And Hector was never, you know, he never punched anyone, he was never an awful child. I could just see that there was something that was eating him up that I had no control over. And actually, as you say, to just stop and listen and observe and also accept that perhaps this is out of your control. You get to a point where you think that you can't help your child. And I'm sure many people do rush off and try and get a diagnosis or, you know, and that's going to make it all right. That doesn't. But it gives you a kind of platform to spring from in terms of trying to then help and just manage the situation. If that's all you can do is manage it, which sometimes I feel that's what we do sometimes. And then occasionally when I see Hector do things that I know he would never have done a year ago, that's really is, you know, it's an exciting place to be. But I don't think you're ever trying to label anyone. I think you're just trying to help them through life. And as a parent, that's our role, right? You've got to try and make it as easy as possible. I don't necessarily think just telling children all the time, this is my way or no way, this is how it is. I'm sure for I don't know what percentage, but a big percentage it probably does. And they'll go on to be very fully flourishing adults long term. But I don't think that would have been the case for Hector. I think it could have got bigger and bigger, and he probably would have found himself in quite a lot of trouble, actually.
Both of you, thank you so much for talking about this. I appreciate it can be a difficult subject, but I really appreciate you both speaking out about this. I think it's an important subject, particularly at the moment with, I think, lots of child and teenage anxiety on the increase. I found it really helpful and useful talking to you both. I hope our listeners have, particularly you, Hector. That's an amazing thing to talk about at age 14. I certainly couldn't have had the awareness of mind or objectivity to talk about it when I was 14. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate both of your time and effort.
You're so welcome.
Thank you.
Cheers, Dan.
You have been listening to the Do Podcast with me, Gav Thompson. Thank you so much for listening. Please do leave me a review and subscribe, and please do email me with any comments or feedback to gav@thedolectures.co.uk. As mentioned at the beginning, the rest of Seasons 1 episodes will be released every Friday. This podcast was produced by George McDonough with music by James Morton. Goodbye!